Welcome to Let's Talk. My name is Sharad Kutin, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. Now, today, because it's been a heady day in politics today, we had Khairi Jamaluddin proving that the politics of the loyalty is still very important. He was there for the president of his party as he faced over 54 charges, CBT and the like. Also in Penang, more pressure on the Penang state government with a landslide, with detractors saying the Penang state government has been refusing to stop hillside development. So that conversation continuing there. And Anwar Ibrahim was reported as saying that he's going to be picking up on the issue of the rights of Uyghur Muslims in China when he visits Beijing next week. That's going to be, I think, a fairly uncomfortable conversation. But we'll cover that when it happens. Now, today we're going to be focusing on festivals, both past, present, and future. And I am delighted to have in the studio with me some of my favorite people in the Klang Valley. And they represent the festivals that have passed, are currently going on, as well as coming up in the future. I have with me Bernice Cholley, director of the Georgetown Literary Festival that comes up next month on November 22nd, I believe. We also have Susie Kugabas. She is the curator of the Confluence Festival organized by Think City. And also with me, and a former colleague of mine, of course, the voice of radio, or maybe the face of radio, Uma Pagan, Ambike Pagan, founder of the Kuala Lumpur Festival. Thank you guys for being here. Extraordinary moment for me. I'm so happy that you're here.
No pressure.
Okay. There's a lot to talk about, right? And, you know, I think the issue of festivals, so many of them around the world now, there is, you know, I mean, dozens, hundreds of festivals across the world and all kinds of festivals. The question is, are we festival out? Is there still a place for festivals? Many cities want them, and for various reasons. Bernice, your thoughts on the future of festivals?
I think festivals are absolutely necessary because it's sort of like a, you know, an emotional sort of, it's like getting an emotional workout, getting your brain sort of, you know, going for some very intense exercise for 4 days or 3 days or something like that. It's vital, I think, to any city. I mean, in India, for example, almost every city has a literary festival, and that might be a little sort of, you know,
too much, but
a little over the top. But,
right, okay. But is it a thousand flowers bloom kind of situation that, in fact, you don't want to be rationalizing this, controlling it, planning for the future? Susie, yeah. Confluence is very new.
It's the inaugural festival.
It is the inaugural festival. The question is why? Why, when there are so many festivals going on in Malaysia already?
Yeah. Well, the organization that I'm curating the festival for has a mandate to rejuvenate the inner city and to try and bring Malaysians back into the inner city and to make it a more attractive place. So while there are festivals happening in other parts of in KL, this particular festival is focused on the diversity of the city itself. And it's changed a lot over the years, as we know. And so this festival is focused on the newer Malaysians, you know, the diverse
Okay, so the diversity of downtown KL.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Astro One is, in fact, located downtown Kuala Lumpur. And in the last month that I've been here, I've been had a wonderful exploration of the city. Mm-hmm. And I think the festival... We're going to come back to the festival proper. Uma, your thoughts. You've been running Kuala Lumpur for many years now. What kind of gap did you think you were filling when you first started that festival?
Well, let's talk, Sharad.
Oh, very funny.
Thank you. No, there was a gap in the sense that I think people in KL were kind of starved for a space at which they could express their ideas openly and freely. I mean, this was before Malaysia Baru, right? And I think our main goal was to provide that space, however small that may be, that you could come and share ideas and not be fearful that anything would happen. So you would sit for a panel discussion or a lecture, and we'd encourage you to speak your mind. No matter who you were, no matter what your thoughts were, no one's going to tell you to shut up. No one's going to tell you you were wrong. But to have that
this
lively
May 9th
debate.
May 9th changed that. I mean, in some ways, you were filling a gap in a country where freedom of expression was still constrained.
Yeah.
Today, it's very different. Does Kuala Lumpur still have a relevance?
Yes, of course, because I think we're still learning to navigate these waters. And, of course, that conversation changes, right? So from saying things that were once considered taboo in public spaces to now being able to express yourself openly, how do you then deal with that open expression? Because, yeah, sure, things may have changed and maybe things may have opened up slightly, but we're still the same, right? And so we still have the same kind of strictures that, you know, restrict our speech in sense, that self-censorship. We've got a lot to overcome, actually. Just a change of government is not going to shift that. So,
So, Bernice, we're going to be talking with greater depth about your festival coming up this year. You started very small, but it's always been slightly political. It was literary, always, but it was also...
Always. Yeah. I mean, because Georgetown was in Penang, and when Penang got the UNESCO World Heritage Status site, Lim Guan Eng decided to turn it into a cultural city, to have, you know, festivals, and there are multiple festivals that are happening in Penang, but the thrust of GTLF has always been freedom of expression, freedom of speech, and it, you know, was the last, one of the last bastions of free speech and expression in Malaysia. And it continues to do that. I mean, this year's theme is the state of freedom. And we decided on this theme last year before May 9th. So it's very, very, it's very relevant. It's extremely political this year because we are exploring the various states of freedoms that we live, write, and live in. Yes, it's a very provocative festival. It's always been, and I've been part of it,
and I came in as a moderator and for many years, and I enjoyed it tremendously. Susie, were you looking at the landscape? Was Think City looking at the landscape, and you as curator, trying to fill, again, a gap? What was there not happening that you needed to kind of somehow address?
Well, the gap really is the newer migrant communities that live in the city. You know, there's, you know, from Bangladesh, Nepal, Myanmar, they have businesses.
Syrian refugees.
Yeah. So in curating this, we're really looking at those newer communities because we are diverse as a country anyway. We're diverse as a city, but there's newer diverse groups coming in. So we wanted to represent them in the festival.
To what extent, Uma, are you working off what is a global network of festivals, kind of responding to it, making sure that the festival is actually timed in a way that there are these migratory flows of festival goers, aren't there?
Yes, there are, but I think this kind of festival that both Bernice and I run, which is kind of rooted in literature and ideas, is still a relatively new thing in Malaysia. So for the most part, you know, there's my festival, and then there's the Singapore Writers Festival, there's Ubud, and then there's Georgetown Literary Festival. But it boils down to a question of money, right?
And, you know, and does it? And that's a very important issue to discuss, right?
Absolutely. And also, and when it comes to, like, even sharing writers, we actually have to create a relationship between these various sources of funding for these festivals, because then you need to go halvesies on, like, flights and hotel accommodation and all of that stuff. And that's another layer of complication that we haven't quite approached as yet.
I mean, I think what's true, of course, is many of us who go for these festivals, whether it's the one that in the park or in a space, you know, we don't see the effort. We don't see the immense planning that needs to take place in order to bring all these acts together and make the experience a kind of seamless one. Bernice, you've done it for many years. Are you tired?
Yes, I'm exhausted. I'm completely exhausted. This is it's the festival's in its eighth year. I've run it, we've directed for 7 years since the beginning. Umar did.
I did a year when
2014
Bernice was away.
When I was in the States in Iowa. But yes, it's really absorbing. It's my stress levels are, you know, it's 5 weeks to the festival, so I'm just like,
And where does most of the stress come from? Is it just the practicalities of putting that festival together?
Comes from dealing with agents, publishers, writers with huge egos, and who are also very insecure, and just trying to just put it all together, just to create this kind of magic. You know, it's all a jigsaw, and then just putting it all together. So these names are constantly in my head. You know, it's eight months' work for me. And we've only just confirmed the program 5 weeks before the festival. So this is massive. It's just, you know, I dream about it. I have nightmares about it.
I want to pick up on the egos, right? Because it seems that a festival, in many ways, needs to have the big build names in order to draw, a crowd, doesn't it?
Yes, I don't think so. I think what we've worked with, and Bernice and myself especially, because we have no money. If you want big egos and big names, you need cash. I mean, just take a big US author or UK author. Yeah. If you're going through the agents, it's going to cost you about $10,000 to $20,000 US dollars, right?
Business class.
Business class.
Is that they, do they demand?
Yes, of course.
But they've got writers, and
of course,
well deserved.
Especially if they're with, you know, some of the top agencies in the world.
Correct.
The first thing is business class, and then, you know, and then how much is there a speaking fee? Some writers want $10,000 just to appear. I mean, we don't have that kind of money. We just don't.
No, we don't. And so what we've done in both of our festivals, actually, is to try and come up with a program that appeals to people on a personal level. So therefore, when they look at this topic, they're like, oh, wait, that is a conversation that appeals to me. I may not know who's on the panel, but I want to go and talk about that.
But you did have the billion-dollar whale, Rogers. I mean, that's a big bill, right? That's a big name, right?
Yeah. To be fair, Tom Wright, who wrote the book, he's a journalist, right? And and he was incredibly accommodating. Let me tell you, and you know this, Sharad, journalists don't travel business class. He was nice enough for me to get him an Air Asia ticket. Oh. It was wonderful.
Because he was in the region.
I got him a hot seat, though.
Oh, I see.
You know, I sprung for a hot seat, gave him a little more leg room. But no, I think, you know, with someone like that, I think when you're dealing with someone who is has a personal connection to Malaysia as well, he's coming to promote a book that has something to do in Malaysia, it's an easier sell. But good luck trying to get Stephen Kingler to come down, or J.K. Rowling, or Neil Gaiman, you know?
And is it also, I think, a question of the city you're inviting them to? They must want to come to Malaysia. But we'll pick up on that shortly. We're taking a short break now. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutan. With me in the room, Bernice Chorley, director of the Georgetown Literary Festival, Suzy Kukathas from the Confluence Festival. It's ongoing. It started today, in fact. And Umapagan Ambike Paken from the Kuala Lumpur Festival. It started and ended, but it's still very relevant. And I want to pick up on this issue of how you build a festival. And you'd started out, it was kind of a literary festival as well, but the second year, it became a festival of ideas. And I wonder why you did that and how it is, how you distinguish, say, a literary festival from a festival of ideas.
Sure, yeah. We started off, our first year was a straight-up literary festival because that's something I've always wanted to do. And we did. And then after our festival, we're doing a post-mortem. And it was really a cheat because I realized I wanted to talk about a lot more things other than just books. And I thought if I branded it, I was speaking to my co-founder, Hardesh, and I thought if we branded it a festival of ideas, what it meant was I could do conversations around music and film and theater and everything else and poetry and all of that stuff and just brand it under this massive umbrella. But I could also do other things. I could talk about the environment. I could talk about, you know, anything. And I could bring in everyone, not just authors and thinkers. I could bring in scientists. I could bring in everyone.
Okay, Bernice, do you see having or limiting your festival to just the sphere of books and literature, you know, whether it's fiction or otherwise, or non-fiction, do you find that limiting?
No, I mean, because GTLF has always celebrated world literature, and we're one of the very few festivals in the region that does that. And that's why we work with a lot of the embassies. So we have writers from Iceland, from Norway, from Germany, from the Netherlands. You know, it's very spread out. So it's quite unique in that sense. So it's not completely anglified.
But and it's also still a festival that goes to ideas, isn't it? I mean, when you talk about literature, when you talk about the written word, the outspoken word, it is also about ideas, isn't
it? Absolutely, but it's also looking at the contemporary role of the writer in society. I mean, we deal with issues that are very, very prescient, that are very urgent, that we have to deal with. There's going to be a panel on hate speech, for example, in the festival this year, which is, you know, a very relevant topic. We're going to talk about Me Too as well with some of the women writers.
And the queer element as well.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Okay. So, okay, these are all, because things that have traction with Malaysian society, people know and see the relevance for ourselves. Suzy, your festival, again, is a bit of a contrast because it seems to be in the realm of the traditional arts, it seems, at least from what I gather, but correct me if I'm wrong. How do you see those two things kind of operating?
I haven't focused it so much on traditional arts, but on having worked in the area, in the city centre, what I've perceived people enjoy. And they seem to be enjoying in that city, traditional Malay music, Chinese chamber orchestras, Punjabi doll. So I've programmed it with focus on Malaysian performing arts, as well as I have a whole day on Sunday, which is communities from the area, so
okay.
Bangladesh.
And I want to come back to the details of your festival, but it does seem to, it also harkens, I think, to what Think City is doing, rejuvenating the city. And I believe that you've had a program where you place artists in MRT stations, LRT stations.
Yes.
And how is that? What has response been to that?
It's been a fantastic response. It's run since 2016. And in fact, it's just got on a hiatus right now from September because of a lack of funding. So even Think City, who does fund other people, is now in a situation where they don't have the funds to continue and are looking for funding.
So maybe we'll come back to the funding issue later, but back to you, Uma, and the question of the festival ideas, right? Here it is, there's a kind of a mass appeal in Confluence. Is there a kind of elitist tinge to something like Kuala Lumpur?
I don't think so. I think all festivals are festivals of ideas. I think the simple answer is, when I branded it a festival of ideas, it's sexila. I mean, it was something no one had done in Malaysia before.
Okay, Malaysia, but Adelaide has a festival of ideas.
Adelaide does have a festival of ideas.
Dangerous ideas, they call it, is it?
They call it the festival of dangerous ideas, right? And of course, there is a big one in Aspen as well, which is run by Walter Isaacson. He's the guy who wrote the Steve Jobs biography. He runs a festival of ideas as well. And I think what it allowed us to do was break through those barriers of elitism. And Malaysians don't read very much still. We're still building that. And sometimes I find that the idea of a literary festival can be quite intimidating to people, especially if they feel that they don't read. They think, oh, okay, there's nothing there for me, you know? And so by kind of shifting the focus away from that, it's like, no, wait, these are conversations you have every day at home. And that's something Bernice and I do when we curate our panels. Yes, it's a literature festival, but, you know, if you have a panel on hate speech or on democracy, we never do a panel where it just goes, hey, here we are speaking about this author, about his particular book. So it doesn't scare you off. I'm hoping it's a gateway drug, right? The idea is,
it is.
You come in, you hear people talk, and then you go, maybe I'll go check out that book. Maybe I'll go buy that book.
Right. I mean, do you have that kind of pedagogical impulse that you want, in fact, to teach and educate people and then ultimately draw them in this post-literate society that we all live in globally back to the written word?
The amazing thing is that most of our audience are young people. And I think it's the same with Kuala Lumpur, you know. We have busloads of students coming from KL, from Singapore. We have lots and lots of workshops.
Actually, Bernice, you should point this out.
Yes.
Festivals all over the world, literary festivals all over the world, are attended by old people.
Yes.
And this is something that I find unique to the region. Mm-hmm. Singapore, Earth, Ubud, so many young people.
A lot of young people.
Ubud as well.
We're hungry.
Young people. Well, Ubud has a lot of Australian housewives. But still,
the superannuated classes. They call people with huge retirement plans.
Yes,
or healthy retirement plans. Okay, again, you know, when you look at the work that you do, Susie, and, you know, are you looking at who comes for it? Can you count the numbers? Is that important to sort of describing the success of the work that you do?
You know, one of the reasons for doing this is also to try and break the barriers between Malaysians who have stopped coming into the city centre because they see it now as foreign. So in doing something like film festival, which has performances beforehand, we want people to sit down and, you know, just have something to eat with your neighbour and watch a film and watch a performance and break that. In terms of data collection, we've tried to come up with a bit of an interesting way of doing it. Just before the film starts at 8 o'clock, we have a little game that people play. Who likes nasi lemak? Who? Nepal, put up your hand. You know?
Okay.
So in that way, we're collecting information about people. We've tried to do it in a very short, fun way.
Okay, so this also brings us to the point of the question of language and the language of the festivals, right? Both the Georgetown Literary Festival and the Kuala Lumpur are large part of the Anglophone world. I know you say you kind of try and push against that, but is that in some ways a losing game? Can we really embrace the multilingual world, or do we kind of really operate in the English world?
Well, English is, you know, the lingua franca of Southeast Asia. But at the same time, you know, we are pushing for translation workshops. We have a two-day translators roundtable this year. You know, writers are encouraged to speak and in the language of the work. So we have translations that are projected. The writer reads in Icelandic, for example, or Thai or Dutch. So it's different. You know, very few festivals around the region actually do that. But unfortunately, it still has to be English. That is the common language
of us. When I'm bringing in writers from all across Southeast Asia, when I'm bringing writers from Japan, from European countries, from Germany, the medium of communication for everyone else is English.
It's English. Yeah.
We encourage them to speak in Japanese and German and all of that stuff, and we have interpreters on site at the panels to translate what they're saying, and we tell them, be as comfortable as you want, right? Mm-hmm. Mix it up, speak in English. And the same goes with our local speakers. We tell them, if you're happy in Tamil, you speak in Tamil, we'll have someone who'll translate, BM, Mandarin, whatever you want, like Cantonese, whatever you want, right? So we always provide that medium of translation. That's important. But when all of us are sitting in a room and having dinner afterwards, everyone's trying their best to speak English to one another, right? Because it seems like the simplest way to communicate with one another.
Okay, we're going to be back with the question of translation. What's lost in translation when you have a festival as ambitious as some of the festivals we've been talking about? Stay tuned to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin. Welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin, a show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. And we're talking essentially about curated conversations that happen at festivals. We have Bernice Cholley, director of the Georgetown Literary Festival. We also have Uma Pagan, Ambike Pakin, who's got a well-known voice on BFM and also founder of the Kuala Lumpur Festival. And Susie Kukatas, who is a curator of the Confluence Festival. It's a new festival. It's an inaugural. It started today. It's an inaugural festival. Susie, it's a fascinating contrast, your festival as opposed to the festivals of Bernice and Uma. How much of that could be turned into something that Uma and Bernice do, meaning bringing in the work of Syrians, of Bangladeshis and Nepalis, who also have a very rich literary culture? Yeah. Do you think that Malaysians would be drawn in, or do you need, as Uma said, a gateway drug, as it were, through the arts and culture, much more kind of visceral in its impact?
Well, I think to begin with, we're starting off small. So on this coming Sunday, we have a whole afternoon of performances by people from Syrian refugee community, Bangladeshi students, domestic workers from the Philippines, migrant workers reading their poetry and playing music. So we really are starting off. It's the first time we're doing this. We don't have a political or message here. We're really trying to engage with people.
And it seems like it's also a festival that's very much about where it's situated,
yes,
right? It's not global. It's extraordinarily local, in the best sense of that word. Yeah. It's feeding off the energies of the space in which you occupy.
Yes.
As opposed to, say, Bernice, you're kind of reaching out to that other realm where we actually do connect with spaces in the world that are so far away through the written word, through the spoken word. What is it that you could do? Where could this festival go that could connect with the local? Is it about Penang, for instance?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, Georgetown is the perfect venue for a literary festival because it's very quaint, it's very charming, we've got beautiful buildings to work with. Yes, but we don't have that many Malaysian writers, and I've exhausted all of them, and there are very few who actually live in Penang. But coming back to the issues of working with migrant communities, I've been working with a team running the migrant refugee poetry competition for 4 years. So for this year, for the first time, we're getting some of the winners. Mm-hmm. We're getting eight poets and refugees to perform at the festival, and it's from Syria, from Pakistan, from Sri Lanka. So it's going to be from Afghanistan. Okay, it's going to be amazing. Uma.
We did the same.
Yeah, you did the same. And
Migrant Poetry Festival. We had the first one was at Kuala Lumpur,
yes,
and
right.
Bernice was a judge.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So that's okay.
It's all very incestuous.
Okay. So there's this. There's an issue of kind of representing a kind of working class cosmopolitanism,
yes.
right? In choosing to work with refugees, migrant workers who kind of are the underclass of our cities and our national economy. But what about the high end of the Bangladesh culture, the high end of Nepali culture? I was at the Dhaka Literary Festival
That's
just
right.
2 years ago. Mm-hmm. A tiny festival, mm-hmm. very modest, but it had V.S. Naipaul, because mm-hmm. extraordinary moment for the festival, because he, you know, soon passed away after that. But again, you know, is that something you think would appeal? Are Malaysians more likely to come for somebody from the West, for instance, or from the developed world than they are for cultures they associate with our migrant population?
I think it's how you sell it. I think it's how you sell it, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the key. And, you know, I think the main reason we probably couldn't get Naipaul is because we couldn't afford him. You know, I mean, and that's the key, right? Yeah. It goes back to what you can afford or how you craft that message. So if I was getting a Nepali writer or a Bangladeshi writer, it would be about what conversation the Malaysian audience would want to see. I mean, you talked about a sense of place, Sharad. I mean, all of our festivals are very rooted in place. Georgetown has the word Georgetown in it. Kuala Lumpur is a play on Kuala Lumpur. And every year we try to make it relevant to the city we're in. Even though we bring in people from the US, the UK, wherever, we make sure those conversations actually are relevant to the denizens of this particular city. Because otherwise it's just kind of pointless. Because then you're just, I don't know who you're speaking to.
Yeah.
If you're not speaking to the KLite. Or the Penangite.
Did you, Susie, reach out to the missions, you know, the embassies and the high commissions to kind of work with you in order to bring these this festival and to kind of create it? Are they interested in the presentation of their cultures in such festivals?
I didn't work to curate the festival itself. I did approach the Indian Cultural Center and the Indian High Commission to access the films that they have in there, so that I could use that for the library, because, you know, otherwise I'd have to go through the whole process myself, whereas it was just, and I wanted to give it the backing of an organization, okay. of big organizations like that. But just going back to the point about having, you know, the diversity, besides the refugee groups and the migrant workers, we also have Bangladeshi students who've been living and studying here for years. We have Filipinos.
But not too many years, because they ought to have finished with their degree in 3 or 4,
right?
Some
of them don't, though. We've got Indian expatriates who are living and working here, who are part of the fabric of Malaysia. Filipinos who've been in the community for a long time, who actually are professional singers. So really try it and get a very diverse group of people. It hasn't been, you know.
I think, you know, talking about, I guess, how these foreign consulates and embassies, they are incredibly helpful in that sense, because I think they've, over the last few years, have been very keen on pushing their cultural elements. Mm-hmm. And I think it's easy to do in Malaysia because we're exposed to so much of it. You know, it's not a hard sell to Malaysia. And if you look at this year alone, Sharad, I think we've had a film festival from every possible country. It's month after month, Czech Film Festival, Japanese, Korean, I think the European Union Film Festival is going on right now. Yeah. So we're exposed to all of these movies, for example, and it's an easy sell to Malaysians, because I think we're lucky in that sense. We've been exposed to so much foreign culture for so long that it's not alien.
Okay. There's also a question of people and the market and the pool, right? You already talked about the limitations of, not the limitations, but the limits of the Malaysian talent pool in terms of writers. Mm-hmm. You kind of end up scraping the barrel or inviting people back again year after year. It's the same list. And I know, as a moderator, I know why I've been invited back year after year. But, and so, you know, when you kind of think about a festival, does it always have to be fresh and new? Are there conversations that are, is there a through line that you just want to keep coming back to in your conversations?
Well, this year we are featuring emerging Malaysian writers. So writers who have books out, maybe one, maybe they're in a part of several anthologies, or they have books coming out. So we're starting to do that, because this year the festival is 4 days. So we're stretching, we're really stretching. We're looking at translation. We're looking at emerging writers. And there's going to be a lot of stuff in between as well, book launches and film screenings, poetry film screenings. There's a brilliant Taiwanese poet called Yumi Mi who's coming as well to the festival. So we yes, of course, I think there is a through line, because at the end of the day, we are writers living in a changing world. And how does the word, how does the craft of writing, the discipline of writing, change in the times that we live in? You know, so we talk about, it's really essentially the craft of the writer and the writer's role in society.
But Sharad, also, we've got to remember that a festival is also something very different from a Malaysian writer publishing a work. There's a performative element to it. And so sometimes we go back to inviting the same people because we have an audience to cater to. And there's nothing worse than standing at the back of a room and watching your audience just go to their phones because they've completely disconnected with the person on stage. Mm. And so sometimes we go back to these same people. I'm sure that's why we invite you to moderate all the time.
Because
there's such a performative element, right? Yeah. And that's so important. And because we have this long road ahead of us in developing young Malaysian talent and writers, our festival serves a dual purpose. It's educative as well, right?
Absolutely.
I'm hoping that the people who attend my festival this year in 5 years will feel inspired enough to have published their work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to pick up on one of the things that you all have mentioned some way, the question of funding, but that's going to be in our next segment. Stay with us. It's Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin, only on Astro Awani. Hi, and welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Bernice Chorley of the Georgetown Literary Festival, Susie Kutkathas of the Confluence Festival, and Uma Pagen Ambike Pagen of the Kuala Lumpur Festival. That's spelled with a C-O-O-L, Kuala, Kuala Lumpur. Okay, Bernice, when you started out, I know that the Penang State Government was, you know, kind of backing this. It was a small grant. It's grown. It's huge now in terms of the kind of the numbers of people coming. Yeah. And they continue to support it. And I know they support the Georgetown Festival as well. What do you understand about the thinking of government in supporting festivals?
Well, Lim Guan Eng was an enlightened bureaucrat who believed in the value of culture and the value of books. So, I mean, we get a certain amount from the state government every year, but of course it's never enough. That's why we work with the embassies and the cultural institutions of the world, Creative Scotland, Icelandic Literature Centre, Writers South Australia. I mean, it's just, it's looking for funds all the time. I'm always looking for money because it's never enough.
But then, okay, especially politicians like Guan Eng, who's now, of course, our finance minister, very concerned that every dime is accounted for,
absolutely,
that the using money, public money, has to be something that everybody can enjoy, right? Mm-hmm. So the politicians are perhaps loath to support minority programs because what they are looking for is the greatest impact in terms of, and the greatest number of people. It's kind of a utilitarian argument. Mm-hmm. Did you find at any point in time needing to justify your existence to explain why the festival continued to need support? Especially because what are the numbers, at least in the initial days, attending something like the Georgetown Literary Festival?
Last year we had almost 5,000 people, I think, over 3 days. I've lost my train of thought now.
But
ours is a free festival, and that's why it's free. It's free and open to the public, and you know, I think you had some issues about that because you started.
But you had some paid elements too, right?
Yes, for the workshops.
Like
for the workshops.
Evening with Tan Thuang Eng, for instance, that was paid.
Yeah,
you had to pay for it.
Well, okay, so you got high tea with that.
Yeah, you did get high tea, and you got a slightly grumpy Thuang Eng.
That's right.
Fending off questions of why he didn't want to be contemporary, right? Okay, and of course he's gone on to win awards, so we all have keep quiet now. But Uma, funding. Did you get any state support? Did you get any support from the city?
Okay.
Or largely a private endeavor?
We've always been a private endeavor, and that is intentional. So very early on, Hardesh and myself, my co-founder and myself, we made a decision not to take any state funding.
And why?
Purely so we could have any kind of content ever. Like, you know, a couple of years ago, was it last year? I can't remember. I had a conversation between a religious scholar and someone from the transgender community about Christianity and Islam and where it stood with regards to LGBTQ rights. I would have never been able to do that if I had taken state funding. Maybe in Penang, but not in KL, right? And I think that was our primary driving motivation as to, and it's been tough. We've had years where we've had lots of money, and then we've had years like this year where we had absolutely no money. And we've always tried to work within what we've got. Okay. We've taken money from corporates, but we work very closely with those corporates. So we make it clear as to what kind of festival we are, what we do, what kind of content.
And this is not a uniquely Malaysian problem, right? State funding of the arts and culture, despite the charters and what it do come with some strings attached, at least politicians have to explain why they do things. And Susie, you know, it comes back to a statement you made earlier, but this wonderful program you have of putting the arts in public spaces where people are kind of moving around, but it's you've had a lack of funding for it. Now, just who was there and who stopped? Because I know Think City is supported by Khazanah, right?
Yeah, by Yayasan Hasanah, which is the foundation of Khazanah.
Okay.
For the first few years, they funded the program with the hope that some partners would come along wanting to continue it. Because Think City, as an organization, I don't think is in a position to continue programs long term like that. So it ran very successfully for a few years, and we had thousands of people coming through. But now it's in a situation where, you know, they are looking for other partners to help sustain it, basically.
Okay, let's talk about partners now. Bernice, in the corporate sector, from the corporate sector, who are the ready partners? And what is the thinking behind with them that makes them kind of so open to the idea of funding a festival, for instance?
We have very few corporate sponsors, actually. I mean, a lot of our partners are the cultural institutions that exist within Malaysia. Eight years ago, when I went to Paul Beckers, who was the Dutch ambassador at the time, and asked him, I would like to have a Dutch writer at my festival. And he was like, really? Oh, how interesting. I never thought about that. Money for culture? Let's give it a thought. So, I mean, you know, I had to go and personally meet these ambassadors and get them to believe in the fact that we can produce a good festival. We deliver, and this year we won the London Book Fair's International Excellence Awards. So we are the leading literary festival in the world right now, which is tremendous.
Well, congratulations to you. I didn't know that, but that you do have hotels sponsoring a stay. You have airlines, and do you have any
MAS is coming this year for the first time. 10%. It's on our website. It's there. 10% off if you fly to the Georgetown Literary Festival. So
and you have to prove that you have to have a ticket or something.
No, you can buy it online. There's a code.
Ah, okay.
Yes, there's a code.
Same question for you, Uma.
Corporates.
Which corporates and why do they spend money?
We've been very lucky. Over the last few years, we've had people like BMW who have supported us for 5 years in the past. And I think they already have, at least globally, they already have a line through, right? In the sense that they sponsor short film, they sponsor a lot of cultural events, and I think literature wasn't too much of a leap, or ideas wasn't too much of a leap. We also pitched it to them as, you're a company full of new ideas, aren't you? Don't you want to be a part of this?
You have to make them imagine that they are aligned with what you do, right?
Oh, it's a marketing pitch, right? You have to, last year we had Astro, coming. Astro came in to sponsor a very specific segment on young and upcoming filmmakers. It was called Episodes, and it was part of the Kuala Lumpur Festival. And it was talking about young people creating content, which is something Astro is heavily invested in. So it's about tapping the corporates and what their agenda is at that particular point of time. So we may not get the same people over and over again, but it's a constant process of walking up with a begging bowl to different corporates, because they change their minds, right? I mean, we've got great foundations, Yayasan Saim Dabi and CIMB Foundation, but every year they'll change their focus. One year they'll be like, oh, we want to support the theatre this year. Or the next year it's like, we want to support English language education. So it's tapping into these right people at the right time. Bernice is right. There's a lot of forms to fill out, man.
Yeah.
A lot of forms.
So, and that's good, because it improves the transparency, and people have to be accountable. And that's what we want, right? We want accountability, even in the arts we do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Susie, From your perspective, yes. Right, what are the biggest challenges in sustaining a festival? Is it purely about the money, or are there other challenges?
Well, I guess it depends what festival it is. I mean, for the one that I'm curating right now, it would be to see the impact that it has. Is it making any difference? Are people coming to it, you know? The organizers had some funding, I didn't have to go to Astro and to other, you know, people who to get films for free, to ask them for support in different ways. So even with the little bit of money you do have, it is never enough.
I mean, the impact story is actually a complex one, because you can measure ticket sales, you can measure all kinds of things, people walking through, you can do a little counter, but the impact, especially when it comes to culture, is sometimes indefinable, right?
Of course, of course.
You see something, you smell something, and you know, 2 years later, it factors in your decisions about your life and your life choices. Do you have a story, Bernice, about the kind of impact that Georgetown Literary Festival has had on somebody's life?
We have people who come every year, every single year. The same old uncles and the same old aunties who live in Georgetown, they come back every single year. And they, you know, and they're faces that we recognize.
I see them all the time.
Yes.
It's true. So they're kind of addicted to the festival.
Well, yeah, because it's you know, I mean, and these are of that older generation. These were people who were educated in English and who read, you know, the classics. So they are very, they find an affinity with the festival because it speaks to them as well as the 17-year-old who's trying to be a spoken word poet. So, you know, but we bring in tourism. There is tourist dollars that comes into Penang, and it's in the millions.
You know,
because, you know, we get a lot of people coming from all over the world to the festival.
But it's also touching one person at a time, right? That's the key takeaway. If you touch that one writer or one person, one kid that's inspired somehow to pick up a pen and write and tell their story. Yeah. We had, and I'll tell you a story. Last year, there was a girl at our festival. She was at every panel. She was taking notes and she was asking these really pertinent questions. And I was like, I found she was like 18 or 19 years old, and I was shocked and amazed. And her mum came up to me after the festival and she said, "Thank you so much for doing this. She's had a tough time at school. She couldn't fit in. She seems to have found her tribe, and this is." Mm-hmm. And she told me this has completely changed her life. She was depressed, and somehow being here over the last 3 days meant that she has people of the same mindset. Mm-hmm. And she didn't know these people were around in KL. She came back this year, and she sat through everything again, asking the most pertinent questions, and she was so happy by the end of it. And yeah, it's touching those one people.
Okay,
one
so person this time. Person may be on her way to becoming a tribal leader herself.
Give her a job. Yeah.
Okay, we'll come back and wrap up this conversation about the future of festivals. Is it cosmopolitan? Is it local? And where it can go further out of the Klang Valley, out of all the developed areas of Malaysia into other areas, perhaps less serviced by such incredible cultural events. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with Misha Radkutan. Welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin. We're talking about festivals, and you can be part of this conversation at any point in time. You can email me at letstalk@astro.com.my. At the moment, my feedback email includes just one email. It's from me saying test. In the studio with me today, I have Bernice Cholley. She's the director of the Georgetown Literary Festival. I have Susie Kokathas, who's with the Confluence Festival. Started today and ends on Sunday. Go online. You can catch the, you know, get the program and make sure you catch some of the events there happening in the city center. And also Umapagan Ambeke Paken, who is with the Kuala Lumpur Festival. It just ended, but it's hopefully it'll be back next year. It's an extraordinary coming together of all kinds of minds and writers and such. Now, talking about the future, there's an issue about the future. Bernice, is it true that you are leaving the festival? Mm-hmm. You are leaving the festival. Okay, so perhaps now you're free, free to talk about the future of festivals and literary festivals. Where could they go? They seem to be at least cited at the moment in places where there's already so much privilege. Mm-hmm. People already so globalized, so cosmopolitan, and plugging into much of that global culture. Is there a need for festivals to travel to places, the borderlands of Malaysia, places that aren't serviced by this kind of global cosmopolitanism?
I completely agree. I mean, I'm looking at a dream. I have this dream of having a festival of ideas of sorts on a boat, traversing the planet with key people who can make change for the future of humanity and the planet. I mean, that's what I'm really, really interested in at the
that's
moment.
That's an interesting idea, like the love boat, but except an ideas boat.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
With scientists and environmentalists and shamans and musicians and kids, you know, people, and really, because we have 12 years left. I mean, that's what the IPCC report states.
Before we reach a tipping point.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Okay.
So these are my interests right now, but also working with writers who are writing about the future, writing about the future of humanity and you know, dystopian futures. So this is something that I am very, very interested in at the moment.
Okay, well, let's see if somebody funds that wonderful idea of yours. Uma, for you, where could festivals go? To the fringes, Lahad Datu, perhaps, where our Minister of Culture, the newly minted Minister of Culture, actually comes from?
I've not met him yet. I don't think anyone has. actually, you know, for anyone who's below 50, The Love Boat used to be a TV show.
Yes, no. Yes,
anyway, it dates me. I know. This is my shout out to that generation. Thank you very much.
I think it has to, right? Mm-hmm. But sometimes I think when we do these things, part of that motivation is also to inspire other people to do it. I can't do everything because I don't have the kind of insider knowledge that is required to take it to those places. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping someone from those places will be inspired enough. And there are young people doing it, right? There are people doing it in Ipoh. There are people doing it all over in much smaller scale, purely because of funding as well. Now, if I had the money, then I would definitely broaden those horizons and hire curators from different parts of Malaysia. Mm. I always had this idea of doing a festival that goes from kampung to kampung called Rendang and Reading.
And serving rendang and books.
And books and storytelling, right? Mm. I've never had the funds to pull it off. But, you know, things like that, because you have to go into microcosm, I think, when you're talking about that kind of penetration. Meanwhile, Kuala Lumpur, Georgetown, Confluence are these umbrellas that everyone can come to. But then you need to go out into all of these
places. What I like about the two ideas so far is actually the festival moves. And that's very interesting. Maybe you could have a Pan-Borneo Highway Festival. It goes across Sabah and Sarawak.
Yes.
In a kind of, you know, a literary fashion, what is it called when you have a caravan? Mm. A caravan.
Oh, talking about caravan, I actually attended a festival in August called Caravan Next in Poland. And it was a real community festival. I mean, the Confluence is a community festival, but that was a festival in a small town where everybody in the town was involved. So there was, you know, events held in the local church, events held in the library, events held in the prison. I actually worked in workshops in the prison, in the town square, parades. It really involved every, and you know, the mayor sang. The
mayor sang. Let's hope he had a good voice. It was a Karakoram moment, was it?
It was the wall. Yeah, that was the opening night. Was actually, and they had school teachers.
Pink Floyd,
the wall. Yeah.
Okay,
actually done outdoors. It was fantastic. People rappelling down, you know, with guitars. It was quite fabulous.
Okay, so we don't lack ideas. Yeah, what we need are people to champion those ideas and make cultural festivals serve all kinds of communities. Those are kind of global, cosmopolitan, local communities. You know, traversing this huge country of ours.
But Sharad, we also need to make it okay for young people to think that they can do this. Mm-hmm. You know, we've...
Do you think still inhibit young people?
I don't know how many generations of great writers and filmmakers we have lost who are now accountants and doctors. I mean, nothing wrong with being accountants and doctors, but for the longest time we've told them that, you know, to make a career of yourself, you have to be an accountant, doctor, or lawyer, right? And there are all these hidden secret writers somewhere. Mm. But, yeah, that needs to be instilled. Hey, you can go out and do this. It's a good, it's a viable career choice. You may not make a lot of money, but
you'd be happy.
It's something you can do, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Susie, final thoughts from you guys. We have about a minute. What would you like to see something happening in the city, you know, in the next 12 months, for instance?
That's a really big question. I think Malaysians need to have more platforms. We don't have enough infrastructure. We're not like Singapore, where they have a National Arts Council, where there are publishers who publish poetry. Nobody publishes poetry here. I have a whole, you know, I've been teaching poetry to students for years, and you know, where are they going to get published? So we have these, you know, we're so fractured. We have people who read only in English, and the writers write only in Malay. We don't even translate each other. We're not reading each other. So there are a lot of problems that we need to fix. And I think a literary festival like GTLF tries to address some of those issues, but at the same time leave people very, very inspired.
Okay, thank you so much, Bernice. Bernice gets the last word, well, because I've run out of time.
Basically.
Thank you so much, Bernice Chorley, director of the Georgetown Literary Festival, Susie Kukathas from the Confluence Festival, and Umapage Nambike Paket from the Kuala Lumpur Festival. You've been listening to a discussion of festivals, their importance to the life of the city, of cities, not just Kuala Lumpur, Penang, and perhaps other small towns in Malaysia could be given this kind of boost through festivals. All possible ideas, remember, you can always reach me through letstalk@astro.com.my and tell me what you think about this issue. We are here every day, Let's Talk at 10 p.m. only on Astro One.